Chapter 7. Hallie. When I was still a civilian, the moon was a mythical destination, our first permanent base in space, yet still in view of Earth. With a decent telescope and a clear sky, you can see most of the structures on the Earth-facing side of Luna. When I was a kid, I used to dream up all kinds of imaginative and wildly impractical ways to get up there without the money for a ticket to Luna City. After 5 years of service in the fleet, I've been on Luna dozens of times. I've been back for fleet school, tech school, and half a dozen specialty courses for the combat controller career track. By now, any mystique the location once held for me has long since evaporated. Part of the reason may be that the military buildings on the moon are generally windowless, so being in a building on Luna feels just like being in a starship that's underway. We did get to do a lot of vacuum excursions during combat controller training, but I was usually too busy filling my battle armor with sweat to stop and admire the view. Most of the military installations are on the dark side of Luna anyway, so there's nothing to see overhead but empty space and distant stars. Nobody comes up to Luna for fun. On my shuttle ride over from Gateway on Saturday morning, I'm the only one in the passenger compartment who isn't obviously on the way to a new duty station. On a normal weekend day, transit shuttles to and from Luna are usually half empty, but this one is full almost to the last seat, evidence of the accelerated training schedule adopted by the fleet. We're losing more and more ground to the Lankies, but we're stuffing more and more garrison troops onto the worlds we have left, and the fights with the SRA over the remaining real estate out there are getting more vicious and costly. Hallie is an instructor at the Combat Flight School. CFS takes up a fair chunk of lunar real estate on the fringes of the huge fleet school complex. I ride the lunar transit tube out to the CFS stop, and by the time the doors of the tube pod open, I am the last passenger on the train. Hallie is already waiting for me when I walk through the double airlock that separates the transit platform from the main hub of the fleet's combat flight school. She's standing in front of the CQ station, bouncing up and down lightly on the toes of her flight boots. She's wearing an olive-green flight suit and her usual short and shaggy, helmet-friendly haircut. "Sorry I'm late," I say as I walk up to the CQ station to sign myself in. "They wouldn't let me catch a shuttle from Gateway earlier." There's a corporal staffing the CQ post, and I step in front of Hallie to render a formal salute to an officer in the presence of junior ranks. Before I can bring my hand up to the headband of my beret, Hallie grabs me by the lapel of my Class A smock and pulls me toward her. The corporal behind the CQ desk looks away as she plants a firm kiss on my lips.
"Welcome to Dropship Elementary, Sergeant," Hallie says when she releases me again. "Now let's get up to my berth so I can peel off this monkey suit and have my way with you."
I'm not used to Hallie's unabashed display of affection in front of junior personnel, but I don't object to the proposed course of action, so I follow her as she takes me by the hand and pulls me into the corridor beyond the CQ booth. Behind us, I can hear the corporal on duty chuckling softly. Hallie doesn't seem to be in the mood for preliminary chit-chat. As soon as the hatch of her berth locks behind us, she makes good on her declared intent and undoes the buttons of my uniform with impatient urgency. Her one-piece flight suit is more convenient to unseal, and I tug on the zipper to peel off the baggy green outfit the pilots call a bone bag. My formerly neat Class A outfit joins the flight suit on the floor of Hallie's berth. Her cabin is cluttered with books, manuals, printouts, and other school-related debris, a disorderly state that is highly unusual for my overachieving by-the-book girlfriend. As long as I've known her, Hallie has always been 100%er on every test and by every military standard. The Hallie I knew in basic wouldn't have left so much as a dirty sock on the floor of her berth. This Hallie has three different uniforms spread out on her bed, and the little fold-out table next to it, and a full laundry bag in the corner of the room. She pulls me over to the bed and sweeps all the clothing laid out on it onto the floor. Then she takes me by the shoulders, tosses me onto the bed, and climbs on top of me. Our coupling is fast, furious, and urgent. Hallie is a lot more rough and aggressive than I remember her. By the time we have spent ourselves on each other, I have gouges on my back and blood on my lower lip.
"Whoa,"
I say, still out of breath and slightly dazed from the experience.
"Don't use me up all at once. I have a few days left on this leave." If you think that's all you have left, then get your ass out of my bunk.
Allie grins.
Go find me the young Studley private who could go 3 times in a row back in boot.
He's right here, I protest. He's just a little tired from heroically trying to save the Commonwealth.
Don't worry so much about the Commonwealth,
she says, and kisses me on the corner of the mouth. Then she gets out of the bunk and walks over to the bathroom, kicking discarded clothes and paper manuals out of the way.
Just worry about staying alive. I'd hate to have to look for a new boyfriend at this point.
Like you'd have a hard time finding a replacement, I say. Fleet's lousy with studs in tight flight suits who would love to, fly close formation with you.
And that's the problem,
she says from the bathroom.
Pilots are all overconfident, self-centered adrenaline junkies. I want one of those I can just date myself. Less hassle that way.
Look around in Hallie's messy little officer berth while I listen to the sounds of water splashing in the shower. In the last 5 years, she has lost her by-the-book valedictorian uptightness when it comes to rules and regulations. What she hasn't lost is her hyper-competence. She doesn't keep her medals and commendations on the walls of her berth, but I know the abilities of the average junior officer, and Hallie is one of the best dropship jocks in the fleet. I know there's a distinguished flying cross tucked away in her locker somewhere. And she made the jump to first lieutenant after the absolute minimum required time in service. I have no doubt she'll be a 20-star general someday, if she decides to become a lifer, and the Lankies let us all live that long. In the bathroom, the 2-minute timer shuts off the shower. A few moments later, Hallie comes out drying herself with one of the scratchy standard-issue fleet towels. Her dog tags jingle softly on their chain as she starts drying her short, dark hair.
You hungry?
She asks.
Some,
I say.
Dropship U is a pretty good rec facility, Class 1 galley. Come on, get dressed and let's get some chow. I want to talk to you about something.
The dining room of the Fleet School's rec facility has a real viewport, a huge slab of triple-layer polyplast that takes up a 10-meter section of one of the walls. When Hallie and I sit down at an empty table with our meal trays, we can see Earth, one of its hemispheres anyway, rising above the built-up lunar horizon in the distance. The fleet complex on Luna was built before they deemed the inclusion of complex exterior viewports an unnecessary expense and just went to camera-fed screens instead. It seems slightly obscene to be eating what must be a 2,000-calorie meal in view of the North American continent, where 2/3 of the population have to make that many calories stretch all day. Allie pulls 2 bottles of soy beer from the leg pockets of her flight suit. She pops the caps off both, then pushes one toward me.
Officer privilege, she says. You're on leave, and I am off duty until tomorrow morning. Drink up.
Yes, ma'am. I sketch a salute and take the bottle from her. I don't particularly like soy beer. It tastes like fermented tofu with a bit of a fizz. But it's one of the few alcoholic drinks we can get through the official supply chain. So, what do you want to talk about? I ask.
Us,
she says.
I mean, where we are and where all this is going. This is what, the 6th time we've actually gotten together since basic?
7, I say. 8, if you count the Versailles.
I have a slightly sinking feeling that I'm about to hear a Dear John speech.
Considering our occupational specialties, that's actually not bad for 5 years.
No, it isn't, but it's not great either. I don't want to keep having to wait 9 months between leaves to get enough of you to last me for the next 9. It's not ideal, you know?
No, I say, it's not. But unless we manage to get assigned to the same ship again, it's what it is.
We already used up that particular golden ticket,
Allie says.
So we need to figure out some alternative, because this super long-distance boyfriend thing isn't enough for me anymore.
I take a bite of my food. Today's galley special is beef over egg noodles. The sauce has a vague soy tang to it. But the beef is real, not some soy imitate like the civilians in the PRCs get. We're in the military, I say, in the middle of a shooting war. 2 of them, really. I don't think the fleet is going to make it a priority to accommodate some random couple in the ranks so they can spend a little more bunk time together.
No. Allie says. Of course not.
She stabs the beef with her fork and shovels a healthy amount into her mouth. Allie is smart and pretty and the most capable junior officer I know,
But ever since I met her in boot camp, she has eaten with all the speed and grace of a calorie-starved space dock worker.
But we can use the system to make them give us more of what we want, she continues.
Oh, how so? She studies me for a moment, as if she's trying to decide whether to go through with letting me in on her plan. Then she puts more food into her mouth and chews before answering.
What do you know about my family, Andrew?
Not a lot, I shrug. You don't talk about your folks a lot. I know you're from the burbs, and that your parents weren't happy when you joined up.
Not quite true,
Allie says.
They all but disown me. Ever wonder why I never asked you to come home with me on leave?
I figured it was because we decided that we didn't want to burn up most of our leave time in transit.
There's that, she says, but mostly because I didn't want to kick off World War IV at home by showing up in uniform and with what they'd consider a sexual lunch bag.
I chuckle around a mouthful of beef and noodles.
But,
she says, and waves a beef-tipped fork at me.
If I brought home a respectable prospect for future grandkids, I'm pretty sure it would take the sting out of the whole military enlistment thing. For my mom, anyway. And she's the one we really have to worry about.
Wait. I say. You mean getting hitched? Are you proposing right now, First Lieutenant Hallie? Hallie is a pragmatist, not the romantic type at all. Hearing her talk about marriage, however oblique, is about as surprising as hearing a lanky recite Shakespeare in flawless English. I look at her with an incredulous grin.
Well, here's the thing, she says. I looked up the regs. Married couples get extra family leave. We could see each other twice as often. And if one of us buys the farm, the other inherits 80% of the end-of-term bonus.
In the 5 years we've been together, I never considered marriage. And if I had, I wouldn't have suggested it to Hallie. I always had the feeling that she was happier with our loose commitment. But part of me is immensely pleased by her implied proposal, even if it's wrapped in Hallie-esque pragmatism.
My parents aren't just middle class, she says. Mom's the chief surgeon at a private hospital, and Dad designs ballistic delivery systems for the colonial administration. I'm their only kid. I come home with a presentable husband and dangle that grandchild carrot in front of them, we could have a pretty good life back home, a place to take our retirement bonus.
Too bad we just re-upped, I say. I remember Liberty Falls, that pristine upper-middle-class enclave in the mountains of Vermont. And the thought of getting to live in such a place seems almost surreal. Fresh air, clean streets, dairy farms, no weekly B&A rations, no need to check your back every time you walk down the street.
Look, you know I'm not the sappy type, Allie says, and I don't give a shit about engagement rings or anything like that. But I don't want you to think I'm just making a business proposal here.
She takes a slow breath and looks over to the viewport, where Earth hangs low in the sky, blue and gray against the all-absorbing black of space.
We match, she continues. We laugh about the same stuff. I don't have to explain much to you. We have a good time when we're on leave, and we've seen some pretty hair-raising shit together. You're a good boyfriend, and you'd make a good husband. I've met enough guys in the fleet to know that I'd have to look long and hard for someone that fits me as well as you. We've been the closest thing to family for each other since we met. Let's make that status official.
She shrugs and gives me a lopsided little smile. If I didn't know better, I would say she's nervous.
Might as well get the monetary benefits too, you know,
she says. I laugh, the tension in me releasing like a decompressing airlock. Holy shit, I say. That's the most romantic thing you've ever said to me. I reach across the table and take her left hand in mine, touching my thumb to the area on her finger where an engagement ring would go. I do, I say, and she laughs.
Come on, let's see what it takes to get hitched in the fleet.
We're in the armed forces of the North American Commonwealth, and the NAC military doesn't ever let you do anything in one step when they can make you do it in 10. We head over to the base's personnel clerk to check on the procedure for a marriage between service members, and it's like a cold shower after the rush of excitement from earlier.
You file your intent today, and you get your marriage license in 6 months,
the clerk tells us.
That's one hell of a wait for two frontline troops, I tell him. I don't know if you've noticed, but there's a war on.
I don't make the regs, he says. Fleet rule, so people don't get hitched just before a drop to make sure their folks get the bonus.
Wouldn't want to fuck the government out of money by leaving a grieving spouse too soon, Allie says.
She chucks her military ID card onto the counter in front of the clerk.
Go ahead and file it, Corporal.
I get out my own ID and put it next to Hallie's, and she looks at me and her expression softens a little.
I'm not going to let it ruin my mood, she says. Let's grab some more of that beer and head back to the berth. I want to fool around with my fiancé.
The personnel clerk takes our IDs and scans them into the admin console in front of him. A few moments later, we are officially engaged in the eyes of the fleet. Clock's ticking, I say to Hallie when we take our ID cards back from the clerk. Now we just have to stay alive for another 6 months.
Easier for me than you, Hallie says. But I want you back here in 6 months, whatever you have to do.
I'll do my best, I say.
Whatever you have to do,
she repeats. I promise. I'll be back in 180 days sharp.
Better,
Hallie says.